Mr. Gray, Reel 2. You were talking about parades and, of course, standard of dress. Was that very important from in those early days?
Yes, you had to be strongly disciplined, standard of dress had to be perfect. Regimental Sergeant Major Jamison, he had the front of your medal up. He was the most smartly dressed man I ever saw in my life. Rather than Jamison. What a smart man he was. Everything about him was perfect. He stood around more straight. He had a wonderful word of command. And everybody wanted to be like him. You see, you modelled yourself on him. Which I did was, I would say, no little success. I was well turned out, you see. And I showed him Major Jamison. The standard discipline in the regimental depot was very, very strong.
Were you housed in a hut?
In a hut, yes.
How was it heated?
Wasn't heated, no. In the winter, they put two of these footbelly stoves in. But in the summer, they put them out. But you have three blankets, you know. Your top coat.
And where did you keep your kit?
At the head of your bed.
And was that in a cupboard or?
Well, I had no cupboard, no advance. And it's the cupboard in the foot of being built, you see.
Must have been difficult to keep clean in those circumstances.
Oh, no, you had plenty of lotion showers, you know. No, you just, at night time, you had nothing to do with clean your kit. I had no radios, and anybody got a boat, they went round and round about them, you know. You'd see these pictures, and everybody come in doing a fair stair dance. That's sort of routine up there, yeah. There was all sorts of activities in the barracks at night time.
Was there any bullying in the barracks?
Oh, yes, you always had your bullies, wherever you were, you had bullies.
How did you cope with them?
They always get their comeuppance, then, Philip. They always get their comeuppance. Oh, yeah, you're going to play. Oh, yeah, you're bullies.
What kind of things were they doing?
Well, they put the head down the toilet and that sort of thing, you know. That sort of thing. Three or four of them, you know, all the inoffensive kids. I always took a leading part in stopping that, you know. I'd known bullying in the hospital when I was in Darlaston. But with miles compared to the bullying they got in the army. They were never tolerated by the NCOs, mind. Except on one occasion in the 70th Battalion. When I joined the 70th, because I was 8 weeks advanced, you see, I went and joined the 70th. There was a corporal there called Brown up the coin. And he couldn't handle his men by the way. He had what he called his heavy gun. Three or four tufts, you know, to sort the man's out. His only instance I know of an NCO being actually taking part in bullying, but the NCO of yours, you know. I said, I've only caught the drunk of being a pig, but he wasn't a bully. He's kind of funny, he took your weekend pass. You know, one button on doing, he took your weekend pass, all that sort of thing. But he wasn't a bully. Oh, no, the bully being wheeled at night time. With a stocking full of sand, you know. There's been a stocking full of sand. With a stocking full of sand, oh, right. You know, get it, we didn't learn anything about it, but he stopped being a bully. Next time I was always having a cigarette sound, and they were very scarce.
Keeping the room clean that you got, you would have to do that. How was that done?
He had a brush. That's all. He had a brush in there. In our barracks, one of the lads had a brain wave. He looked in the floorboard. Just to sweep them up on the what I mean, the officer ordered the duty officer or the officer. You had to find fault somewhere. If you were perfect, you know, he had to find a fault, otherwise he'd get round from his superior lately. But he did have to find fault of it, and that lad would maybe get a few of their CB, you know. Come find a barracks. Yeah, they did. We had no money, any of them. Yeah, he couldn't get up with no money.
You'd have kit inspections regularly?
Oh, yes, sir, every week.
And how was that displayed? How was that put out for the inspecting officer?
I found that most of them were hurting for that.
And if anything was missing, what happened if you'd lost something?
Well, you had a payment, you know, would be division in kit. And a lot of the time I was doing exercises, somebody down the bike was stealing stuff, which meant that one man had to come on off the exercise and stop the bike from all the time. Yeah. Another thing I found unfair was the bathroom damages. You had got a ton off your pay, so you wait. The bathroom damages, there's no damage. It's the way of stealing money from it. But the biggest swindle of all was electric iron. You know, they had all those old bolts, electric irons. Landscot was part of the same field, the landscot was coming to track the field. They had to do electric iron. Yes. And all the water cells here. And I said, after for a ton of peace, it's got this whole lot, you know. For a ton of peace in there, Kitty, I was going to get off my clothes, but he's going iron all the time now. Then we left Bantam. Partner was here, well, look, lads, we've got a good time together. We went to the battalion. Go on up there, the iron, and get the crop of Johnson. They must have worked that 150 times. Yeah. But 12 shin was a good bit more than I used to know.
Did you have any drills in those initial few weeks that you were at Bradford?
Oh, yes, it was smart. Probably drilled. And drilled a lot, like 8 weeks intensive, very intensive training.
And did you realise at this time you were in the Durham Light Infantry?
Oh, yes, we knew that stuff from the day you went to Bradford. That's the only thing my mother played hell about. She lost a brother in my first World War, yes, eh?
Did they drill you immediately at light infantry pace, or were you gradually worked up to it?
No, I drilled immediately at light infantry pace. There's a sergeant major sort of slouching about like guardsmen, you know. It was an MP, he became an MP, Mr. Short, Lieutenant Short. Lord Glen Connor, he became, you know, and he was officer of the branches when I was there. What I would term, I took the working class snob, wasn't a very nice person. And he sat in BBC studio when they were getting interviewed, and he told a blatant lie. He said he'd taken part in writing the Light Infantry Handbook. And the handbook we were trained by was by Sir John Moore. You know, and that man had told him. He said he was Light Infantry officer instructor. He said he didn't have to write the handbook. He didn't. If he did, then the handbook was written by Sir John Moore. And he's father, like him. You've heard of John Moore? Not the Thomas, not the John Moore.
The drills that you taught, where did they start? At what point did they start drilling you? And what was your first drill that they taught you?
Marching. Foot drill. You know, stand up there and open all the march and all that stuff. And, then we got rifles and we taught rifle drill, how to carry the rifle. I was very, very disappointed when I found I couldn't get on my shoulder. I carried the trail, you see? At first. And you know, that's when we were getting up with five after safety, you know. But since we were down the street and two men walking together, that enemy, the Germans came right on his shoulder, split the slope, and the day I went up the trail, where the Germans did it, right, he was right off his shoulder, see?
And where did your drills go there? You know, you drilled as in your ranks and then you're marching. What was the next drill or the next stage?
Route marching.
What distances were you route marching?
The first was 5 miles, then 12, and we did march from Brantford to Whitburn, the rifle range. It must be more than 20 yards, you know, it must be more than 25 miles. Of course, being lights, the blitzes weren't so big. But I used to feel sorry for anybody over 11 stones, you know, it's very terrible. But in the young soldier battalion, the 70th mine, 75 miles of note in 24 hours. And that was it, 75 miles, 24 hours.
And what did you carry on a route march? What kind of weight were you carrying?
Your rifle, your pack, your bottle of water, your gas kit. Obviously the rifle was the heaviest part of the equipment. And your water bottle. And, In your pack you had your next team. You got to get your money.
What was in your pack? What were you carrying in your pack?
Your first item, your first deal. Shaving deal. That stuff. What did you do?
And did you have was it in stages? Did you have stops?
Oh, yes.
Rests?
Yes, you had a stop every hour for 10 minutes. No, I didn't like that. I didn't. I was only content about 3 hours, you say, but that was the law at the time, say the law, because we were working for young soldiers. But when I got the young soldier battalion in the 70s, we're doing these long marches, we double march, come to Tilliard Pools, and be 10 Tilliard Pools, double march, and 4 years walk, the march, you say, and I thought, as if to eat the miles up. Out of my soon passed.
Did the band play you back the last mile or so when you won?
No. The band all the time for social functions. I think I saw the band about 3 or 4 times when I was at Bramford. You all the doors, the fields off the county there. So, you know, flag them.
You've mentioned the rifle as being your first weapon. Whilst you were at Bramford, which we're concentrating on at the moment, did you get introduced to any other weapon?
The boy anti-tank rifle.
What was it like?
Well, the fellow who designed that should have been able to fire that. It wasn't very good. And you like a half-inch cannon, just above a half-inch cannon. And the 2-inch mortar, which is quite a good little thing. It's funny enough, you can fire smoke. And smoke's one of your best friends in action.
The facilities on the camp, did you have a canteen?
Oh, yes, I did have a canteen. I saw this man, I went down with canteen. That's funny story of what, you know, when you're on guard, on the main gate, the bullshit guard. You're taught to turn the guard out for Victoria Cross, who was one there at the time, left them on. They hadn't been made up at the time. And sometimes Mr. Heaviside used to visit, he's the First World War. The colonel got up on the first major of the day, the colonel commanding, for the Victoria Cross, eh? I was in guard this day, and sitting in, ready for jump out to say, the was up on the first dignitaries used to arrive. I had the call, the stentoric call, turn out the guard, you know, front of the guard turn out. But turned out, the guard was sent to Tommy Coase, and they forget him. Lord Willis Smartley, the sergeant's family always writing, then I shall present the arms. To the Salvation Army Major, wearing the bike. Then the sergeant just hit the spell over his chin, he got the head cut. Tommy Coates, your body's a major, isn't he? The Salvation Army Major.
Did you do many guards? Yourself, whilst you at Bransworth?
Oh, yes, I did the guard. Yeah.
So, there'll be the main gate guard, and what other duties did you have?
Well, 24, you're 204 off, you know. Which is terrible, really, awful. I didn't like it at all. No matter how I tried, I couldn't get the stick. But I got the stick later on. I learned a few little ones, you know.
And that was for the smartest man on parade, was it?
I got the stick twice. Yeah.
What was the process of actually mounting the guard? From the time that, in effect, you were told you were going on guard?
Well, he'd be marched up to the barrack square, you see. And the guard would be in 3 ranks. There might have been maybe 40 men on the guard, because you had various posts, so it was a big camp, you see. And behind the guard was a fire picket, who were in denim, you see. But still, marked the polished boots, you know. And the order officer would come on, of course he'd be examined by the orderly corporal, then the orderly sergeant. Then the orderly officer would come on, accompanied by the regimental sergeant major. And one day we had the officer, his father was a general, twin brothers in the army, two brothers, A.K. Johnson. They didn't survive the war, apparently. They were going after those Germans, but right was he treated lads, right in college. But they followed the general, they were going to be generals and all, and my heart sunk when I saw the D.K. Johnson just Most of them casually saunter on up the ranks, you know. Touch a thing here, touch that, like there. D.K. Johnson, he sidestepped. Examined every man. And he tore near the wheel. He found fun with everybody, D.K. Johnson. But what a brave lad he was. He once fired the boys on his trunk from the hip. He spun all like being out of swamp in and off.
So you paraded on the parade ground. What happened next after you'd been inspected?
Well, you march off into the guard room where you change off the other guard. Old guard, you know. The bureau came with it, don't you do that? And he paid the call for the old guard. And the old guard come 4:20, what does the old guard do? He got on the bill of note. He stepped forward and the old guy stepped back. And he said, hurrah, 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 you know, and everything went.
And you say you had done 2 hours on and 4 hours off?
He never took his kit off. He couldn't take his kit off.
And how were you fed? Was food brought to you in the guard room?
That's right, yes. To galvanize bullets, you know, tea and nearly all sandwiches, still there. Couldn't take the kit off, you had to sleep for a night, but the kit for 24 hours, you know. Well, you used to feel awful loud, you know, but he put back in the chair.
Did you get the next day off after you'd done your 24
no,
hours?
No, no, you're quite on duty. Still on duty, you know. Even though you'd had no sleep. You're still on full duty, you know.
In addition to weapon training and to drills and so forth, did you do any gas precaution work?
Oh, yes, I did the gas chamber. The little dot of Lewis light on your hand, you know, do a little bit. Give on the gas chamber for 7 minutes and come with coffee and stuff. And there's one thing Marty and Strutters came in with you. Ah, but the last couple of coat on the side, they came in with you.
And during the process of being on there, did they make you take your mask off to get
out? Yes, right, that's right, that's right. I thought they came with coffee and stuff, you know. Maybe for 10 seconds, I don't know how long, I forget how long.
At Bransworth, did you also go into bayonet training, and did you get that kind of...
Well, that's all trip with rifle drill. And the vicar's gun, too. The vicar's gun, before the war, was a 6 month course. Not 2 year course. The Indian man, the old Indian had it, before the war, a 2 year course, you know. And they tried to come in for 6 weeks. That's where I wonder at the staff people in the British Army, you know. Cause, in 1942, the Germans bring a water machine gun designed to combat the Russian hordes, the MG-42. Now, we got that in 42 and burned a cattle. Now, why couldn't the British copy that gun? The wonderful weapon, the MG-42, you know. And, he didn't need any water with it, no condensate curve, you know, and when he came to the barrel, he put it to the side, the barrel would drop out, to put a new barrel in. They're the biggest beating zone of the vickers. And when the Germans used that, you know, they fired a group of men, they get the whole lot. Now when you fired the brain gun with a group, you'd only get one man, right? I wonder why they couldn't have done that, and at the same time I wonder why they couldn't have cut the Russian tanks like the Germans did. You know, the chance I would have to have, but they used to fight them, and the church finished them. They made good in battle.
Did you get experience of the Bren when you were at Bren?
Oh, yes, of course. Well, you had to strip away some of the Bren blindfold. The amount of second. You know, everybody could do that. You know. Simple little weapon. Nice little weapon, but very low rate of fire, you know. Very, 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 very tiny beating zone. Tiny corner fire. Very accurate weapon, but that's made good when a fellow that took something like a football fell come out, you know. Another superior weapon, the Tommy gun, was the Schmeiser machine pistol. That was a wonderful weapon, too. Yeah.
You said you had branched about 5 or 6 weeks, did you say?
8 weeks.
8 weeks. And that would be your basic training?
That's thoroughly trained.
Did you do any field craft training at Bransworth?
Oh, yes, you did all that.
What form did that take?
Well, crawling through dirty drench and all that sort of thing. Well, the Vickers gun, in particular, the order was, on this spot, not direct to the mount gun, you see. Well, the gun captain number one carried a tripod, a heavy brass tripod. And the very only particular spot, this instructor, would be in the middle of a pool, mud, you see. Because the object was to get the gun as dirty as possible, so you had to take the pieces to clean it, that's all you got to do with the working of the button. And, I was number one this year. I was a lance corporal at the time. This was a different battalion. They sent me to do a coming. Quite about the Vickers gun. And he thought, on this spot in our diary, it's an engine. So I ran forward the track. Well, you cling it up, both hands high in the air, put it down, and the three legs spear apart. Number two comes up with a gun. And he puts the pins in. And he sits down behind the gun. Number three comes up with the ammunition. Okay? Number four, the water can. Number five, the ammunition number. And 3, 4, and 5, we've got to be in ammunition numbers. Well, this lad is a right lad. He's called Paulie Chote. He couldn't read or write. Big, rough lad he was. He put the gun on that tripod. He wasn't sitting down behind it. And this lad was flinging grass rods at him. Come on, you're throwing on the bus. The German's throwing on the bus. What are you going to do? He picked the whole lot up. The gun, the tripod, the ammunition belt. He picked the whole lot up. The sergeant has put the fucking thing down, Victor the Clashman. Have you seen that piece of Victor the Clashman where he picked the Vickers gun up and he shot on the ground and all the rockets? I don't regret it, really. You're all hungry. I'm a damn well fellow here at Brantford. You know, it's time to eat. Well, you're ravenous, young lad running about the fields all there, open air life.
You're also obviously very fit.
Oh, indeed. It's like every young man should at least take, but I wouldn't say a constitution, but lads, you know what they're missing. When you're absolutely fit, you know, and a great life, you see. They don't know what they're missing. They don't know.
Did you get leave in those first 8 weeks?
After 3 months, 7 days. Later on, you got a weekend pass as well. Right? But initially, it was 7 days, it was 3 months. And you got a travel bond. And he thought, you're okay, you know. And that's just something I got to say. He just got on the front in London. You know?
Did you get out to see the local community at all whilst you were at Brantford?
Yes. The people are very kind, Willington, mining community. Oh, the local people are pleased to accept me, you know. A lot of love. Money to Willington girls, you know. Well, one of your friends became Sergeant Major Bob Fawford. He made a working girl. He joined the NDI joint. Nice. Nice.
You've mentioned a number of names of NCOs and officers. Who commanded the depot itself at that time?
The Lieutenant Colonel Commander of the Duke of Wellington. And I don't know. I forget his name. The fellow who commanded the Durham section was Lieutenant Colonel Haskin. He committed suicide. Because he left the son in France. Lieutenant Colonel Haskin, yes. He committed suicide in the castle. It was the young officer there with one arm. I don't remember his name. He'd love to know him, actually.
Did you get much opportunity to meet men who had been in action?
No, as a young soldier? No. One of the VC, he kept the influence of the VC. I mean, them lads, the 6 years and 9th, who got out of France, the TA battalions, they have a challenge, you know, all over the country.
So you said after 8 weeks, you moved to the 70th. Where were they?
They'd come there from Wave of Castle. We were the first tenants in school age. We just moved in, you know. And Lieutenant Colonel McBain. We had Major Taylor, a Boer War veteran, who was a personal friend of J. Pelham Keel, who was a personal friend of Baden Powell. Keel from the first scout group in the UK. Swimming scout group. A lot of people disagree, but that was the first scout group formed in the UK by Major J. Pelham Keel. Major Taylor, I've been RSM on the front here. After the, during the First World War, I've been the first battalion. It was the First World War, the first battalion was never in action. In India all the time. It was kept as a nucleus for the new army after the war. Another agent officer was Captain Wade. He used to draw the cartoons for the Football Echo. And his son and one, the footballer, the big smile on his face, you know, a drawer, into a bit of big scowl. He used to draw those Captain Wade. But they're all ancient manners, those stuff, and Mike Beam was no better, the Colonel Wade. Yeah.
What were they like, these officers, towards the men in particular?
Well, they were very aloof. Well, there isn't. There was no good morning chat to them, you know.
Well, you were a young soldiers battalion.
Yes,
right. So what age range would be in the battalion?
18. 100% volunteer.
And the overall quality of people, what were they like?
Well, mainly very good. I mean, they're a grammar school boy, you know. I mean, I was a grammar school boy myself. The lads, well qualified. Most of them became officers. Yeah, they did. But I had nobody to put £5 a month in my bank account. Yeah, so that was out as far as I was concerned. This is a good thing. I wouldn't have survived, and most of them didn't. You know. Oh, I can't remember. What a Shakespeare in company. Henry V. Well, the reason I had that was that the land had got the very free, Wakenshaw got the very free, you see. Colonel Fingal said he'd have to raise funds for his chap's family, when everybody in the regiment did. And we were doing Henry's gift and doing the miners' halls all over the county. Built the full houses, you know. Captain Smith, they had the miner communicator. Just like they gave the old Wild West, that's what they did in the old Wild West, and they were well received.
Can we look at your first camp at School Aycliffe? What was the accommodation like?
Well, we had beds, but primitive time they had the bayonet, you know, and instead of having tin basins, you had mutton boards, but we wasn't facilities, you had showers, you know. The accommodation was good, but the food was bad.
What were you getting food wise?
Getting porridge and bacon in the morning, and bacon half fried and stuff, and minimal ration, I would say, the food to stay in the stuff. When you complain, you're in trouble. It wasn't as big a day after Colonel Jeffries came, that things you thought they improved, you know.
So Colonel McBain basically was doing nothing about this?
That's right, he wouldn't do a damn thing. He would. As an officer, I couldn't imagine being a battalion in action, you know.
Was he an old gentleman, I think?
Yeah, he was old, he wasn't a gentleman, you know, but I would say he's past his sell by date, you know. I shouldn't have been in there. He might have been called a battalion, if they just couldn't be bothered. But Jeff, he's a real soldier, that man.
So you had these beds in, and were they huts or
the water proper building, hospital building. You know.
It had been built as a hospital.
It had been built as a hospital, yes. And of course, it was before they formed the RF regiment. You had to guard the aerodrome, you know, at Middleton George, which is now Teesside Airport, Croft, it's farther down the river from Middleton George, which is where now a motor racing place, and the dummy at Scotland. Right? And they'd go there for a month, or maybe 3 months at a time. And then between guard and the airport, you're doing exercise road there. There's all the marches, you know, and you can really. Well, at the time, I walked on the football field on my hands. Maybe he'd fall down for a short time, but I'd get on the football field on my hands, you know. And all the lads were the same. In the 70s, young soldiers were coming. The officers there, remember got new officers, well, that, you know, made a glory of a child. Young lads, you know. Michael Tonkin Manor, at the Ferry Strella, was killed at Casino. By Mont Camino, on the Casino Massive, December the 3rd, 1943, and his mother came and stayed with me. And she gave me his 21st birthday print, his gold watch, you know, and my son's got it now in Canada. Great little fella.
Can you take me through